Welcome to the Insider Worldbuilding Podcast, the place where you can experience life in another dimension, told from the perspective of a visitor to that dimension. I'm Fox Keys, that visitor is me, that dimension is called Dunaree, and I have lived here since I was tricked into passing through an interdimensional gateway just after my 14th birthday. Not only do I wish to share the story of how I survive in Dunaree, I hope my experiences in how I was taught to understand this world may help you build your own unique secondary world. To begin with, this show is sponsored by Plantival. Plantival has developed the best natural air freshening vegetation in the City of Bones. They claim that you only need to tuck one sprig from one of their plants into your shirt collar, and it will neutralize bad odors for up to 1 hour. Actually, I will vouch for this claim. I have one of their plants, and I always use it whenever Steincat calls to visit after she's been eating fish for dinner. In this episode, I will describe how my messy introduction to the City of Bones continued, how I was partially introduced to Dunaree culture, and how the streets of the City of Bones are kind of paved with gold. Just when I thought I was getting into some kind of routine, Dunaree reminded me just how insignificant I was. The morning after my disastrous tour outside, when I felt the tickle and itch of an impatient bed, I thought my alarm had failed. I tumbled out of bed. The room was still dark. "Shiny top," I said. "What's happening?" "Your education is continuing," Steincat's voice emerged from the darkness close to the door. "You must always expect the unexpected." Well, Steincat sneaking unannounced into my room was certainly unexpected. And cheeky. I checked my watch. It was 5:45 a.m. What was happening? I sat on the bed, but sprang up when it flexed. Suddenly angry about everything, I said to Steincat, "Why are you sneaking about in here? You could have knocked." Shiny Top said, "He's a cat. Cats are sneaky." Steincat hissed, the darkness amplifying the sound, making it seem like it had come from something much bigger than a really big cat. Not that I cared. All I wanted was to climb back into bed and dream about home for another while. I never had enough time at this place to dream about home. "Follow me," Steincat said, leaving the room. It had become automatic to bring Shiny Top everywhere with me. As we followed the cat upstairs after stairs, my legs grew heavier with every step. Shiny Top said, "We're climbing the rail tower. You can see 43 kilometers in any direction without a telescope." "Not in the dark," I said, trying to laugh. Shiny Top said, "With the right eyes, you can." It was too early in the morning to figure out what he meant by that, so I didn't bother asking. Not that we were going all the way to the top anyway. We emerged onto a balcony about halfway up. The chill air slapped the last bit of sleep from me, but the sight of the buildings beyond the square stuffed my mind with new priorities. Or, should I say, the rooftops of the buildings ringing the square. Little fires of blue and white and yellow and green glowed there. Outlined against the pinkish pre-dawn glow, taller buildings and towers rose beyond these rooftops, making the skyline a higgly-piggly mass of random shapes and shadows. I felt like I wasn't looking at the outline of a city, but some fantastic, half-finished jigsaw. I pointed at the fires and said, "What are those?" Shiny Top said, "The bone jewelers." "Jewelers?" I asked. "Yes," Shiny Top replied, The yellow fires smelt gold, the white fires smelt silver, the green fires are a mix of metals, Steinkat butted in. Shadowy figures drifted around the fires. They made slow, relaxing, controlled movements, poking the fires and sending sparks swirling into the air. The smell of wood smoke reminded me of Boy Scout camp. Oddly, all those severing fires resembled jewels embedded in the velvet shadows of the night. I said, "Why are they smelting ore so early?" Shiny Top said, "It is the bone jeweler's culture. They will never release toxic fumes over the city in daylight hours." My eyes roved over the scene. People up early, working away before dawn. Just like back home. And they were people I was going to have to deal with at some point. Alone. That was when, for the first time in Dunaree, I felt the stab of social anxiety. That dreadful fear and paranoia that I had felt getting stronger and stronger year by year back home. This fear hit me when I had to venture alone into the adult world, or call people I didn't know on the phone, or deal with authority figures. With all the other fears in Dunaree to occupy me, I had hoped that I had left that fear of people behind. But it had followed me into Dunaree. The feeling soon passed, but I remember that first time so very, very well. Then Shiny Top said, "This is a city of 1,000 cultures, restless cultures, clashing cultures, each pushing and pulling from each other." I thought about the murderous clash of cultures in Northern Ireland and said, "Do people hate each other here?" Steinkat said, "There is tension and trouble, but isn't that the case everywhere?" I felt like saying that in Northern Ireland, with a little bit more than tension and trouble. "To understand the city," Shiny Top said, "you must understand the cultures of those who live within it. The bone jeweler's culture is an ancient culture, evolving from a desire to work precious metals into the most useful things." "Beautiful things?" I asked. Steinkat said, "Useful things. The beauty is secondary." That confused me. Didn't people wear jewellery to look good? As the sky lightened, the tops of tree towers off in the distance grew visible. Occasionally, streaks of blue light zigzagged off of them. When I asked Shiny Top about them, he said they were the sea towers that control all shipping in the area. Well, he might as well have said that they were giant talking tomato plants, for all the sense that made to me. As the sun rose higher, and the jeweler's fires sank away, and the city turned white, I put on my sunglasses and tried to take it all in. It was impossible. The day before, I had been blinded by the glare. Now my mind was overloaded with information. I wondered if it was ever going to be possible to see the city in some normal way. Steinkat said, "Not only will you need to know about Brogant when you start school, you will need to know something about the cultures in this city too, especially the culture based around Ganhub's compound." "The artisans in this city," Shiny Top interrupted, "believe that the closer they are to the relics, the most important the products are. For over 1,500 years, the bone jewelers have claimed the properties around the seventh relic." A short silence followed. Then Steinkat said, "You live in the fortress of the seventh relic, so you need to know about the jewelers and their culture." I sighed and said, "More books, I suppose?" Shiny Top said, "Yes. But you will soon get to know the bone jewelers too. You may even work with them." To be honest, that didn't sound too bad. Having butchers or bakers around the compound would have been much worse. But it would have made more sense to show me this view yesterday, before bringing me outside. My whole introduction to Dunaree and the City of Bones was a mess. One day I was being shown buildings. The next day I was being lectured about cultures. It was beyond confusing. And again, I should have been prepared for all this before I had passed through the interdimensional gateway, so I couldn't really blame them for having no plan. We stayed on the balcony for a good while, watching the jewelers clean up their rooftop smelting stations before going below. And when I went below, back to room zero, I found a new stack of books waiting for me. Books about jewelers. Books filled with pictures of strange and beautiful things. Unique things. I decided then and there that, however hard it might be, I was going to bring Mum and Dad home some treasure from this place. As part of the confusing mess that was my introduction to the City of Bones, I learned about culture. I suppose it's a bit unfair to say all of my introduction to the city was a mess. When Ganhook taught me anything, things went great. The others, though. Well, my guides were a talking cat and a ghost who disliked each other, so I shouldn't have expected too much. Now I will give some thoughts about how understanding culture helped me understand Dunaree. The cultures of Dunaree are many and varied. Apart from the intrinsic elements all human beings have, there is no overall culture in Dunaree. Instead, cultures have formed due to belief systems, environmentals, survival factors, and other things. How do you think about the cultures in your world? To add depth and diversity, it could be an idea to have a strong multicultural society. Actually, it is essential, because a complex multicultural society is a source of limitless conflict and limitless creativity. People, and aliens or whatever your characters are, all need a source of identity. To belong to a group is a survival mechanism. We have been doing this since we dropped from the trees and stood on 2 feet. If you drift too far outside your cultural environment, you will arouse suspicion. And if you introduce change to a specific cultural environment, you will encounter hostility. Although they may claim otherwise, most people dislike change. But culture constantly changes anyway. So how does this happen? Strong characters are one method. Creative people, visionaries, or maybe the occasional oddball who is stubborn or mad enough to push his idea until everybody accepts it and says, "Wow, and we thought that oddball was crazy." This has happened throughout history. Right now, your creative project could be the foundation for a cultural shift. Think Facebook, Michael Jackson, or Van Gogh. Each introduced new ideas and created new cultures. Not only is it worth spending time to create realistic cultures to give your world more flesh, you may also be laying the foundations to stir up some cultural shift in the world around you. Think about what cultural societies exist in your world. Is there a dominant culture of war, business, or religion? Are huge, generalized cultures crammed full of subcultures? Some cultures are easier and more interesting to begin with, while a generalized culture, say war for example, is a great source of drama. Where do you begin? It could be too huge a subject to tackle head on. But if you created a subculture within the overall war culture, this would enable you to focus on more details and specific characters. An example of such a culture could involve specific military units whose unique traditions have evolved over centuries. Or perhaps begin by examining the smaller elements of culture in your society. I was introduced to the local culture of creating jewellery. This sounds simple. It's not. It is as complex as any general worldwide culture. But because it was right next door to me, it was easier to get my head around how this culture formed, why it was based in its current location, who the artisans were, and what their culture demanded regarding honesty, excellence, and maintaining their status. You can introduce a myriad of ideas specific to your world by developing a number of subcultures. The jeweler's culture had their own traditions, historical beliefs, customs, and unwritten do's and don'ts. They also had their own secret codes and practices that separated them from the general population and all the other jewelers scattered throughout Dulery. Of course, their jewelry had value, but the utility was paramount in their design. This is what the bone jewelers were most proud of, and this is why the bone jewelers' jewelry was so prized in the overall culture. Also, think about how a cultural shift can occur. How are newcomers accepted in a local culture? I remember once when a jeweler from the Northern Isles arrived in the bone jeweler's domain and tried to introduce a new method of smelting. That did not go down well, but eventually a minor cultural shift occurred. And also don't forget about a fun way of making cultural wars occur. How did the young challenge the old? How did you challenge your parents' culture? How do young people create their own new culture or adapt to a new culture using music and fashion? How can this force cultural change? This sense of belonging to a particular culture is a huge part of our identity. We all cheer for our country at the World Cup finals, don't we? We're all proud of our artists, writers, actors, and other notables, aren't we? Culture brings us together. And creating strong and interesting cultures for your world can be just as fascinating as creating maps, monsters, magic, and whatever else. Just avoid having a talking cat or ghost imprisoned in a walking stick try to explain it to you. It'll go easier that way. This week's Strange But True tells how the streets of the Bone Jeweler's Quarter are paved with gold and other precious metals. For over 1500 years, the Bone Jewelers of the City of Bones have created exquisite jewellery, weaponry and sculpture from jewels, precious metals and livon. But even these master tradesfolk cannot manage every speck of precious metal that passes through their hands. Every time a master jeweler hammers, polishes, or bends a precious metal, specks of that metal come loose and fall to the floor. These specks stick to shoes, and when those shoes pass outside, those specks of precious metal end up getting mixed into the street dirt. This doesn't happen by accident. Oh no, it happens because the paving stones in the Bone Jeweler's Quarter are designed to loosen specks of precious metal from the soles of shoes and boots. Thus, even though the specks of gold, silver and platinum are too small to see, the streets of the Bone Jeweler's Quarter are literally paved with gold. And everybody wants it. Now, a group of master tradesfolk like the Bone Jewelers will not lower themselves to gather this treasure. Instead, they charge specialized cleaning companies for the honor of cleaning their streets. The competition to clean the streets is stiff and dirty, especially when rival companies clash. Mostly, though, it's a civilized affair. The streets are cleaned using Levun-powered wind that gathers the dirt into sacks to be refined later on. This occurs twice a week. The streets are sealed off, properties are boarded up, and a medical team is always in hand in case of any territorial disputes or opposing spells colliding. At other times, opportunistic thieves also try their hand at mining the streets. Illegal methods include using insects that are trained to gather gold dust, wearing adhesive boot soles, and performing quick sweep-and-run manoeuvres. But illegally mining the streets of the Bone Jeweller's quarter is a risky business. If a thief gets caught, there might be bloodstains that need cleaning from the streets too. This, however, is no big deal for the cleaning companies, because, ironically, congealing blood is also an excellent material for absorbing the dust of precious metal. And congealing blood can be refined as easily as dirt. Strange indeed, but very, very true. That's it for this episode of the Insider Worldbuilding Podcast. Next time, I will describe my first non-confusing introduction to the City of Bones when I get to meet the Bone Jewellers. Happy Christmas to you all. I don't celebrate Christmas here, but the days do get short and dark, and they have plenty of traditions to brighten things up. I will talk more about Doonery traditions in a future episode. And please, if you have enjoyed this show, do consider telling others about it, or maybe giving me a review. I would very, very much appreciate it. Finally, this show is sponsored by Plantavel, the developers of the most effective air-freshening vegetation in the City of Bones. One sprig from one of their plants will neutralize bad odors for up to 1 hour. It is absolutely fantastic for dealing with cats with bad breath. Bye for now, or as we say in Doonery, Dreivik.
It was in a search of anybody who was chosen.